Welcome to Help from Future Self.
Hello, Archons. Welcome to Help from Future Self, the conversational KeyForge podcast by and for KeyForge friends. I'm your host, Sydney, and I'm joined this week by my best KeyForge friend. Hey, Blake, how you doing?
Hey, Sydney. I'm doing fabulous. It's been a great week of KeyForge for me.
That's so great to hear. I'm super excited to talk about KeyForge today because we actually have so much to talk about. And thank everyone again for responding to our giveaway. Our giveaway entries are now closed, but we had 53 people email us and boost our egos and tell us how awesome we are. That has been an incredible experience. And I am so excited to start giving away some of these prizes to you for being so considerate.
Yeah, I mean, not even emailing us, but writing us short novellas that we could enjoy in our leisure with our morning coffee. Like, just wow. I'm totally blown away by the things that were said and the time people put into articulating their responses to us from this call out in the form of a giveaway. It's just been like awe-inspiring, to say the least, and made me really appreciate what we do here a little bit more than I already did.
Absolutely. Without further ado, the first two prizes that we are giving away are, we are giving away the Woe Collector Set. And the winner of that is Brendan Getz. And I'm so sorry you missed the campaign, Brendan, but I'm really, really happy to be able to give you one of each Woe card in the collector set. So I'm really, really happy. And you'll obviously get an email from us so we can coordinate that. But congratulations. And the second prize we are giving away today is the Brobnar Token Creature Set and Playmat. And the winner of that is Matt Vargast on Discord. And congratulations, Matt. Really excited to send these to you. I hope you and your kiddo love them. And again, you'll get an email from us and congratulations.
Yeah, congrats to both of you. We really enjoyed your responses and we hope you enjoy these prizes.
Fantastic. So for the rest of the prizes, keep tuning in over the next couple of weeks and we'll give them away episode at a time.
Maybe more. You never know.
Totally. So next on my list for news is, I'm super, super happy that I can let everyone know, for those of you going to Gen Con, I will be at the Ghost Galaxy booth demoing KeyForge. I'm so happy. It's just going to be so much fun. It's like the best possible way for me to spend my time is playing KeyForge competitively and then teaching KeyForge to new people. Could not be more excited. So most of that will be on Thursday and Friday because obviously the Alliance tournament at Gen Con's on Saturday. So you might also see me there on Sunday if, you know, I have to lick my wounds and not be in the top eight there on Sunday. So depending on how that goes, you might see even more of me. But if you are going to be at Gen Con, stop by booth 2927 to come demo KeyForge and chat with me.
Yeah, make sure you go say hi to Sydney. Put some of those email names to real faces for her.
I know, right? Seriously.
Yeah.
Cool. So what we're going to be talking about today is, Blake, now that you've had a little bit more time with WoW and you've been playing a lot of games, fishbowl style, I want to know more of what you think and the experiences you've been having and all of the thoughts that you've come up with since you've been playing more.
Yeah, I've played, I mean, I can tell you exactly how many games I've played because I've literally documented all of it in my KeyForge deck studies book here, my journal.
Out comes we'll the call notepad.
It. Yeah, it's this has been a great experience for me, but I mean, I've played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 games
in
the last week and a half.
That's more than I have. I mean, that's crazy. I love it.
And I'm seeing two decks each time because I'm piloting basically both decks in the fishbowl experience. So it's been a good, basically my process has been to take a deck that I find interesting or something about it is standing out to me. And then I just have it go against the other WoW decks that I've already had some experience with that I think are a good representation of different aspects and see how they go against one another.
Are you doing it tournament style or just whatever, how you feel?
No, it's basically just, I'm doing like five games, usually of four or five games of each single deck study, we'll call it. And then it's usually the new deck. And then I'm taking the decks I've played a couple times and then kind of have an idea, oh, this deck does this. I wonder how it matches up in this way. So it's not really, I would say it's less formal. It's an informal way that sometimes I just want to play this other deck again. And so it's in the mix in that regard.
Absolutely. So I'm gonna start with the most important question first. How has your token experience been? Do you have a lot of breadth of experience? Are you getting a couple duplicates? How's that been going?
Duplicates. Let me think. I actually haven't got a single duplicate token.
Amazing.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, every single one has been different.
Nice.
The one thing I've been blessed in this display is an abundance of Brobnar. So that's been really cool. I've only had one Mars token.
Ooh.
I've had more Brobnar tokens. Oh no, that's not true. I've had two Grumpuses. I've had two Grumpus decks. I've had the Skirmisher. I've had the, is it Cadet, the one that's two power from Star Alliance that's Reap? You can look at the top card of your deck and discard it. I think that's right.
Yes. So, oh no, Cadet is destroyed. Ready Cadet's most powerful neighbor.
No, this is Scout. Hold on. Let me grab this here. Explorer. That's the one. Explorer.
Love it.
So, and I actually really like that one. Then I've had the Researcher, which was in the very first one from the display. I've had Warrior from the deck you sent me from KFC.
Sure.
Of course, that was the first one. Then I had the Priest, which I think is the most useless token. I hate it the most out of all of them. That was in the second deck. Researcher has been really cool. I thought it being one power would not be great, but it has proven to do some things and some stuff. And then Fish. I've had the Fish token as well, which I think is up there as one of my most favorite ones. Like,
really?
The power of Fish, I think, is incredible. Like, it is really understated.
All right. So Fish is a two power creature, and it says destroy. Deal two damage to the most powerful enemy creature. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. I find you can read that literally like fight, deal four damage to the most powerful creature if you choose to attack into it. So there's that, or you can swing into one thing, put damage on another. And yeah, I find there's really good synergies with that. I've also managed to have two Whirlpool decks, which is a rare.
Nice.
And my appreciation for Whirlpool in this set is far greater than it was in Dark Tidings.
Oh yeah,
I find it puts in a lot more work, and you can do some really interesting things with Whirlpool in this set, particularly because of the capture factor.
So Whirlpool is an artifact that says at the end of each player's turn, that player gives control of the creature on their right flank to their opponent and moves it to that player's left flank. So how crazy is it that like having two Whirlpools means that you have a lot of practice with board state and you're playing mm-hmm. both sides anyway, so you know where you're putting out all the cards? That sounds nuts.
It is, yeah. There's a couple I have. I think one of them's in a Saurian deck, if I'm not mistaken, so I can Perfect. Do some exalting. I'll like create a token, exalt the crap out of it, or do things to put Ember on it and then just throw it to the other side and the next turn attack it and get the Ember back.
Oh, that's
amazing. It's a really interesting synergy with Whirlpool that I didn't see happen as much in Dark Tidings. So it's kind of, I think that the card has a new life and more value in this set than it did in the previous.
Absolutely, because Whirlpool also, because you can make so many weak creatures and so many creatures, like that is mixing up a lot of cards because they're also not necessarily creatures on the underside. So when mm-hmm. they get destroyed, like they're going to your discard pile and then your opponent can look at it once it's on their side and see what card it is. Like that's a really cool interaction.
It is, yeah. One thing I will say though, in the talk of tokens and this creation of tokens, I don't like it.
What?
Hot take. Yes, I think that there is an interesting, this is my hot take on Winds of Exchange. I actually think this is an interesting set and not necessarily in a good way.
Ooh.
Because of the fact that in all other Keyforge games, you pretty much know that you can do things and you can do speed. And if the faster you go and the more efficient you are, basically you will see every card in your deck. That is not the case in Winds of Exchange. You may not get to see every card in your deck, which means you aren't guaranteed to get your crucial pieces that could win you the game. Your opponent doesn't know that.
Right.
But I think that works against it because it creates this almost like roulette of will you be able to actually get your win cons that are crucial cards? Like if you have a single card that is crucial to winning, then you have a chance of never seeing that card unless you have some tools to pull it back. So I think actually cards in Mars and Star Alliance really make this less of an issue because you have ways of clawing things back, but you don't really have that in some of the other houses. And I think that's a big problem in terms of having a consistent gameplay like you've seen in previous sets.
Interesting that after playing a couple games, even more games, you've come to that conclusion, because I agree, like a well-rounded deck needs to have all three houses that can play to a win con, because if you've tokenized most of a house, you need to rely on the other two houses. So it's much more of a well-rounded set than it is like a combo deck set to me.
Yes. And the funny thing is the very first deck I ever opened, which is the one you sent me, I've come to the conclusion is my best deck.
Whoa.
Like by far. And you know what's the funny thing about this deck? It generates the least tokens out of all the decks I've played. Like not even close to like how little tokens it generates. Like I'll maybe see three tokens the entire game. And it is by far the most powerful because I'm not losing anything. And then it has Scoop Up in Mars, which allows you to put a non-Mars friendly creature and non-Mars enemy creature into your archives. Mm-hmm. But my token is the Brobnar Warrior, so that's never an issue. So if there's anything of value, I can use that to pull back what I need. But I've just found that deck is... like I'm at the point now where like this deck I need to actually start testing against other sets because of the way it's performing. I did a test last night, not from when you're hearing this, but when we were recording. And I went against another deck that I've identified can do some things. And this deck went up two full keys before this deck forged one, and this deck still won.
Wow.
Like so it just goes. It's
amazing. Do you have a lot of the same goes. Do you have a lot of the same cards? Because I've also found that like the consistency is also super useful, because decks that have multiples and repeats of cards in them, I am able to rely on seeing them.
I have noticed that. Yes, that is definitely a thing, especially in Mars. Like Mars, I feel there is like a core suite of cards you're almost guaranteed to see in every Mars deck. I feel like there's three creatures that every single Mars deck has at least one, if not two of them.
Interesting. So have you found that the token house has affected how you play? Like the fact that you're going to have a lot of creatures from a specific house, has that made you choose that house more often than the other houses?
It definitely makes an impact. Yeah, I think you have to rely on that to a degree. So I would say that the quality of your token is actually quite important in the grand scheme of things, because it also creates a situation where I have one deck where it's the priest, the stupid unfathomable one that has an action ability, exhaust a creature, which is incredibly useless. And I don't want to make tokens because I know I'm not calling on the way the unfathomable house is. It's just a disruption and I'm never going to have a board. So by creating tokens, I'm actually diminishing the ability to do things and I'm potentially losing cards that are important. So I find that I don't really want to make tokens with that deck. But unfortunately, the cards are too straightforward to making tokens. Like I can't go around it without having dead cards. So I've actually that deck is almost a write-off for me right now.
Interesting. Have you had any other decks that have like combo with the token? So I know Bellaton Warrior that comes with the drawback card that you can't discard, and then Blorb obviously has the Blorb Hive. Have you had any experience where like the tokens bring in other cards into your deck?
Yeah, I do have the Bellaton Warrior. I thought this deck was going to be so good. Like honestly, I tested it. It lost every single matchup and it created tokens like nobody's business. It had Pale into Insignificance with it, which I thought would be perfect with having a 5-power, 1-armor creature. And I don't know. I feel like there's two things I have is one, I haven't quite cracked the code on what makes this deck really work. But the truth is I'm noticing, and this is a general theme, is that there's a lack of Ember control that is a serious issue in this set.
Ooh.
I think it's very specific to certain houses. It has a very strong AOA feeling to me, this whole set.
Sure.
Like it's really fun to play in set. The good decks, I think, are more rare. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to not enjoy playing it against itself. But when you go against other things, you're going to find it's falling short on certain components that you would use to measure a good deck. And that's where I think this is like the artifact control is very slim. You have Ember control is very few and far between. And it's in a way that's not as powerful as we've seen in the past.
Capture.
So exactly. So I just think that components miss that can make a deck that seems like it could be really good. And then in the end, you're like, you know what? This isn't good because I don't have this. And I found as well that this set, you actually cycle less in this set, I think, at times, because sometimes you'll create a board state that you shouldn't be calling another house. You just need to lean into what you already have, which
I've seen that a lot.
Great. Yeah, which is honestly a great thing. And I think that's something that has not been done as much in past in KeyForge. And I think it is something that needs to be adopted more when you have, if it ain't broke, don't fix it type of thing. But the problem is it becomes broken at a certain point because you haven't been cycling and you can only, you're only doing one thing and your opponent is also doing other things, but you already know what you have in your hand as responses. And if it's not something to stop something your opponent's doing, you're not getting to that any faster. You would have to actually take two turns just to potentially find the answer instead of getting through and creating an answer. So that's the one side of it that I've noticed is both very interesting and also problematic. Hence why I think Winds of Exchange as a inset experience is phenomenal. But I think we will see very few and far between in the wild of competitive play as a result. There will obviously be some great ones because those exist in AOA. But I think we're going to see a similar experience with Winds of Exchange. New people coming to the game, just having this experience, it great time. In the grand scheme of things, I think we'll see it not doing what we would expect.
Right, totally. I can completely agree with you. And also, I was thinking when you said that not only am I trying to make sure that my board can continue reaping if I have enough, but then a lot of my tokens who can't reap, we also need to fight to then make the board clear so that they are able to reap. So I've also had the experience where I'm getting a smaller and smaller group of reapable cards in front of me, and then I'm still falling behind because I'm not drawing any cards. So I totally see where you're coming from there. I had another question for you, though. Based on what you've said, very AOA-like, have any card combos or specific cards like popped out at you as being OP or very like exceptionally good based on everything else that you've talked about?
I mean, so this kind of links to what you were just saying before, because you were obviously referencing the Warrior token in your previous statement. And I have a deck with that. But not only that is, I love Brobnar in this. Like, before I got Winds of Exchange, I went on a tear trying to find very specific Brobnar Coda decks that rewarded fighting and you would generate Ember from fighting. And this set in Brobnar, it really leans into that. Like, I have a few different Bracken. Like, in almost every Brobnar deck I have has had some Bracken.
That's awesome.
And I love it. And that rewards fighting. Like, I have two Brick Nasty decks. So that's rewarding fighting. I have one, like, my favorite, like, what I'm looking for is a Harmal Attune.
Yes.
And Brick Nasty. Those are the two I want. So Harmal Attune basically says each other Brobnar creature has the destroyed return to your hand. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you can get Brick Nasty, which is going to give you an Ember, whether it survives or not, you can just literally fight into things, gain Ember, get the card back, then play it again. I don't have this combo, but I want it so bad because I think it's going to be so much fun. And then there's things like the Shock Herder is quite common, which allows you to deploy and then fight, and then you can get that even back in your hand. So if you can get that one back somehow by, like, I think I strato smacked my Shock Herder to get it back to my hand to play it again. So I created a token and then play it again. Stuff like that is super fun. But and even Ged I think is really good, which allows you, it says when it's destroyed, Ged, you ready and enrage every other Brobnar creature. I have that with Brick Nasty, and I've done a 12 Ember turn.
Amazing.
Just from fighting with that. I reap the first round and then I fight the second round.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome.
And it's wild. So I'm really loving Brobnar and Bracken. Like, this is the Brobnar I've been craving. Like in every sense of the word. Like, they came back in the most perfect way for me. Like, they fight what you want Brobnar to do. You gain Ember and you're rewarded for fighting in the right ways. They really hit Brobnar, I think, right in the sweet spot.
I really like that. And I've seen a lot of Brobnar decks out there, and they combo really well actually with Saurian and with Sanctum, because the beefy creatures on the board, they'll just do more fighting. And if you have a lot of creatures out there who are fighting, then at least you're keeping their board under control. And you're also not risking, let's say you're capturing Amber on your Sanctum, or you're exalting your creatures with your Saurian, your Brobnar is also there to help keep down the enemy creatures on the board. So I think that, like, the odd combination of beefy creatures is coming back as a really powerful in this set.
It's true. And not only that, there's less board clears in this set as well.
They're fewer.
And if you can create a board state where you can call one or two houses and your opponent literally can't establish a board, they lose. Like in this set, you lose if you can't establish a board. Like it's like there's no way you're coming back.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And have you had any experience with Sanctum in this set yet?
Yes, a bunch. I was actually shocked that it was touted so lowly in the rankings of houses, to be honest.
Right?
I actually think Sanctum is crucial to closing out games. Like you need, there's turns where Sanctum provides things that gives you a boost for one or two. First of all, Sanctum has incredible burst potential.
Oh, insane.
Incredible burst. And then it has ways to do Ember control that is less ready in some of the other houses. Like it just provides, like I find I need my Sanctum in one deck to close out a game because I'm going to need to pull them off a key for one or two turns. And that's only going to happen through Sanctum.
Absolutely.
I just find Sanctum is the quintessential support house. You want to go in and out with them for a couple turns. You call them just once or twice here or there. And then you move on to your main house. I wouldn't want a main house of Sanctum though. I don't think they provide that, but they're support in the most truest sense of the word. Like the fact that they have armor, they have taunt, like so much taunt, which is my favorite thing about them. And then they provide other little things. Like I believe it's the Gray Abyss gives your tokens armor. I believe that's what it says. All your tokens get +1 armor. And I think it creates a token as well. So it has that dual thing, but just having that one armor is incredibly valuable in this set. There's a lot of things that do one damage or a splash one damage. If you get, I can't remember the other bracket, the last bracket, which all your Brobnar creatures, Volk, that's it. Volk gets, all your Brobnar creatures get splash one. That can wreck tokens. Like there's some tokens that only have one power.
Oh yeah.
So by having the ability to give them one armor, you're giving a huge protection.
It's crazy how I think that some of the most powerful cards are in Sanctum. And like I was mentioning before, the fact that like it is a very AOA feel, you're right. And then because of that, there are some of the crazy powerful cards that when combined can go off. And it's unfortunate that tokenizing those cards probably removes the ability to go off in your deck, but those absolutely heavy hitting Sanctum cards are kind of effective. Like, one of my favorites, I might have mentioned this on a previous episode, is Heavy Subsidies. And it's an artifact and it reads keys cost +6. Each creature gains after reap gain 1. And that is such a quintessential woe card because it really slows down the Coda rush with like pips everywhere or even mass mutation with pips everywhere. Because it's the reaping that gets you +1. And it also makes it so capturing is more effective because they have to get to 12. You also have to get to 12, but your opponent has to get to 12. And so capturing down a couple and then letting them have a couple when it's more convenient for you to control how much amber is in each person's pool is a very great way to control who forges when. And I think it's some cards in Sanctum are just simply going to be better in this meta than others because it feeds into how WoW plays.
I agree. It's really interesting. And I'm excited to see how this set is received in a competitive setting because we need to see what is the cream of the crop look like. What is the best? Because we don't really, I don't think we have as public knowledge on that yet. I know there's probably some people who know in small pockets in the KeyForge internet scene. And it's just a matter of seeing how that showcases, because that will really dictate, like the first WoW deck that shows well in a tournament, you will see an uptick in people wanting to find those things and certain cards will suddenly become great. But the truth is, I think WoW almost feels like an alliance set.
Ooh.
Like I don't know if it was created with that intention, but like AOA is a very strong alliance set because of the fact that there's decks that have things that are really not great, but then other things that are really spectacular. This has the same potential, I think. And then you bring in the fact that you choose a token from any of your three. It's just kind of like, it creates a whole new aspect to this. But the problem is, I think building alliance in WoW is so hard because there's so little understanding of the grand scheme of the set. Whereas AOA, we have such intimate knowledge of what is good and what isn't. That's really easy to parse out. I want this. I don't want that. And so it just creates, I think, a very interesting potential for the future. And I don't know if Ghost Galaxy did that intentionally or not, but this set just feels, it feels like it's coming up short in the Archon sphere.
Sure.
Not that it's not totally fun to play in sealed, but I just think, yeah, exactly. I just don't think it's going to be shown as much. Like, it's not that it won't be seen, but for those of you listen to Bad Penny Press, which I do every week, it's, if you're not listening to it, by the way, you should listen to it. It's literally 5 minutes out of your time, and it just gives you an update of everything going on in a very general sense. But they do an interesting thing where they report on, I believe it's the KFPL, and they state the percentage of decks that are represented in the tournament they have, and AoE and Dark Tidings are always at the bottom.
Yep.
I think Dark Tidings is literally what we'll never properly see, will be given the sight it's supposed to, but someone will come in with a Dark Tidings deck out of nowhere. I think it was released in a way that just Dark Tidings will never, ever be what we thought it would be, because the production time of it alone was so much less than any other set that the amount of decks in the wild are just so much fewer.
I also think that because originally when decks come out, when a set comes out, a lot of sealed is played. And that kind of lets some of the decks like float to the top, like the cream of the crop wins those sealed games. And those decks might not end up being the best decks in existence, but what they do is they showcase the best combos and they showcase the best houses. And it's really easy when a lot of those are played for other people who are just watching to see it, to do some research, to try and look for those things and then iterate on that. So I think with Winds of Exchange, the way that you were talking about, I agree that it's going to be fantastic for Alliance also, because it's a really good action artifact heavy set, because it can make up for a lack of creatures in its tokenizing. So there's a good combination there of really able to make combos happen, which is what I've seen a lot in Alliance recently, and also high value cards that if you can put all of that together and then also have creatures, it's going to have a lot of potential.
Definitely. And I just think that with Winds of Exchange, it's going to be seen more because it's going to be the way we get back to playing Keyforge, and we'll see things come out of it in a positive way. I mean, if you look at AoA, I feel like AoA felt like the set that was played the longest.
Sure.
Like, you spent the most time playing it, and then Mass Mutations was the next one, because during the pandemic, it was so easy to get cheap product. So right. Everyone got an abundance of Mass Mutation in that way. But AoA, I feel like, had the most time in the game store. Like, you spent the most time playing that over a period of time. Because I feel like even Worlds Collide, even though it came out relatively soon, I felt like I was playing AoA forever. The game was at such a critical mass of people wanting to play that right. They were so hungry to play this. And then when Worlds Collide came out, there was the whole Brobnar debacle, which made people, I think, more hesitant to want to play in that sort of great, let's go every week. Like, that's, I actually feel like Worlds Collide was when numbers started to diminish a little bit. Every week, there was a little bit less people coming out because I think people didn't like the way Worlds Collide did something.
I can see that. I think some of my best decks ended up being Worlds Collide just because that's the last set that I ended up playing in stores as often as I did. And then when the pandemic hit and Mass Mutation came out, like we were ready to play, but we stopped playing in person. So I stopped opening decks as much.
Yeah, I hear that. It's true.
So let's cap off this Winds of Exchange conversation with one of our historic games. I'm going to give you an over-under, and you can tell me whether you think that this card is overperforming or underperforming for you. So,
okay,
one of our preview cards, Future Booster.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought this one up, Sydney, because this is one of the greatest overperforming cards I've ever had.
Whoa. Period.
Full stop. I'm going to tell you right now, I actually think this is one of the best cards in the set.
What?
I have a deck with two of them.
Nice.
And the reason why I love this card and it's an overperformer for me is because all the issues I spoke of about tokens, this card solves. Not only that, but you deck craft with this. I've done games where I've looked at the top and I'll go, okay, I want to play this house next. This house I know is going to close out the game. So what I'm going to do is this the house I want to play next? No. Okay, this is good for a token. I look at it. Oh, this is the house I want to close out the game with. goes to the bottom. And then what I do is I look every turn, no matter what, I always look. So before I draw, I look, because I'm like, if this is the house I don't want to get yet, I'm throwing it on the bottom. So when I'm crafting that at the end of my deck, I'm going to get a full grip of this one house and have a really big turn with them. And I love the deck crafting. It's almost like archiving, but you have less control over when you're going to see it. So sure. I find this super helpful. And then it's also like, whoa, this card's actually really important. I can't make this a token, because if I do, I have to not only get it in the discard, but then I also have to flip my deck. And then I'm waiting for the potential to even draw it again. Like the odds become so much less, where by throwing it on the bottom, I know I'm going to see it.
I've never thought of using this outside of prepping for tokens. Like, I've accidentally not used it before a token, had it left on my board, so I used it before I drew, because I wanted to get use out of it. But I've not thought of intentionally doing that to handcraft. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's like archiving your deck, basically. Sure, you don't have access to it. But it is incredible. Like, I absolutely... I'm just going to say right now, I've always been a huge advocate for Star Alliance. Mm-hmm. And I heard Star Alliance wasn't as good in this set. And I disagree. I think Star Alliance is incredibly strong in this set, for the fact that it provides great token generation, great token support, and even the means to be more informed when making tokens. So what I mean by this is Navigator Ellie exists. You have Grunt Work. So Navigator Ellie lets you look at the top three cards, put them back in any order. Then you have Grunt Work, which allows you to look at the top three, put them back in any order, and then make a token. So the ability to really be able to control your own destiny of token generation and even drawing, I want Star Alliance in every deck almost, because they have such a great abundance of that.
Have you had the Amberling token yet? I have not.
No, I have not. Not yet.
Right?
I only had the one Star Alliance token, but it's also good. Reap, look at the top card of your deck, discard it. It's still doing the same thing. It provides, I think I even have a future booster in that one. So it's cool, because I can literally go, oh, first I'm going to future boost, because then I can put it on the bottom, and then, or decide, no, I'll leave it on top, and then I'll reap with the other one, and then discard it if I want. So like, the control of all these things together is really interesting. And I appreciate that knowledge. Well, Sydney, I've enjoyed so much getting to have this conversation with you and you asking me about Winds of Exchange. Thank you again for providing me with the ability to have this experience. I appreciate you for that. But of course, we cannot end an episode without our titular segment, and we call this one
Help from Future Self. Future Self.
Sydney, I understand you have something to share.
I certainly do. So I recently have been playing a ton of games on TCO, and most of them have been with my Alliance deck. But what I've realized is there are a handful of tools that TCO has that I have never utilized before. And I think one of these came from, but a listener told me about this after a recent Help from Future Self, where I talked about being able to play certain cards in a certain order on TCO and playing it in person, because I couldn't do it in the order I wanted to. But there are buttons on TCO that let you do that. So thank you. I know, right? So in the settings section, you can do things like order simultaneous abilities. Like, if you toggle that option on and off, it does make the games super long, because there are a lot of things that you like don't unconsciously think of that are in the same timing window, and picking which one you do and when you do it, normally like you're perfectly fine with the order that they do it in. But if you need to put something into your discard in the right order, or if you need two simultaneous things, whatever order TCO picks, to be in the other order, like, it is a very useful way to make TCO do what you want it to do. It's a little bit more like TTS in that way when you have this on, because Tabletop Simulator, that's where you're literally clicking everything and making everything happen. But there's also, when you're creating a game, share hands with spectators. And that one allows you to have somebody watch your game and then be able to help you play through, because your opponent can't see it, but the person spectating you can. So it's a fantastic way to play with the different settings when you create a game, and in TCO in general, to enhance your game experience.
That's great. I mean, I didn't even know about that either. So I'm going to definitely test that out for certain decks. Maybe not every deck, but certain decks for sure.
Right, totally. So yeah, that is it for us today. And we are on Discord. Link is in the show notes. You can find me on Discord and TCO as SC Steel, and reach out if you want to play an alliance game. I recently played a couple games with listener Froglegs, who reached out because of the giveaway. So really excited to continue playing those games. Blake, where can people find you and what do you have going on?
I'm Boulevard Blake number sign 3840 on the Discord, and I'm pumping out lots of content. I've been recording a ton of videos, so please go check out my YouTube. That's Boulevard Blake at Boulevard Blake HFFS on YouTube. Go check that out.
Fantastic. So we'll be back next week with another episode of Help from Future Self. Until then, stay forging.